good afternoon to Port Townsend and all places around this world of ours. KPTZ, by the way, does broadcast all around this world of ours. I'm Phil Anderson. This is Toss Salad. And on today's show, we begin with Lynn Sorensen, RNBSN, Through Science to Health, the regular Toss Salad segment to begin each show on Friday afternoons. But I need to say good afternoon. I almost said good morning again to Lynn Sorensen, RNBSN. Hello, Lynn.
Hey, hello. Good afternoon.
I know. It's part of the day. It's the transitional part. Maybe a little hard for me to keep my mind around it. And you're well?
Yes, I am.
Good to hear. So let's start by looking at, I'm looking at right now at the computer screen in front of me, the Jefferson County Public Health website. I'm looking at 28 confirmed positive cases, which I looked at last week, and I believe the week before. In other words, I don't think there's been any new cases confirmed. It doesn't mean there haven't been any new infections in this county in 2 weeks. What do you make of that?
That's true. Well, I think our measures are working. That's what I think of that. And but there are still 14 pending as of yesterday, and there were 760 tests done so far.
And that number 760, I'm going to refer to that a little bit later. I want to follow somewhat the outline that you gave me so that we, in the 15 now minutes that we have remaining, do get to talk about at least what you want to talk about and maybe a bit of what I want to talk about, too. There is some overlap. You wrote to me, quote, "Infection control is the new way of life. Embrace it." So my question is, what does embracing it look like? And what will it look like in a year's time?
Well, what I hope it looks like is that we probably will give up handshaking, and I don't know what will replace it. But
that means we give up hugging too, doesn't it?
Pardon me?
That means we give up hugging too, doesn't it?
Oh, I hope not.
I do too, Lynn. But if we can't shake hands, anyway, go ahead.
Well, shaking hands is usually skin to skin, and hugging isn't necessarily so. But I can't.
Astute observation.
I can't comment any more about that.
No, you dare not.
Continue. No, I dare not. And if people continue to stay home when they're sick, wash their hands often, and just these measures alone can help reduce transmission of viral illness, such as the flu, the common cold, which are coronaviruses as well. The coronavirus is a very large family of human viruses, and they mostly infect birds and mammals.
So I'm actually keen on this notion of being able to hug, although I don't think I'm ready to be that brave just yet. But we think that, for the most part, the virus does not accumulate on people's clothing?
That I don't know. I just don't want to give up hugging, I guess, in the new normal.
Yes, I understand how you feel. So maybe the new normal sooner or later will be I can buy you that beer at the poorhouse that I promised you. When do you think that will be?
Yes, I'm waiting.
Are you going to have to a little bit, but what do you think?
Yes,
you want to talk about that?
I don't have a crystal ball. I do anticipate that our stay-at-home order may be extended till the end of May, just based on some of the projections. But we'll have to wait on the governor to make that announcement. You know, staying at home isn't a horrible thing, but some people can be very isolated, and anxiety can be coupled with that. And I just know that that is probably a weight that a number of people are bearing through this stay-at-home order, maybe not getting as much social activity as they need.
Well, actually, let's consider what stay-at-home really means. At least I will say that I interpret it as allowing me to be outdoors, even where there are other people outdoors, although where I live, for the most part, there are not. But coming into town on the shoulder of Highway 20 and Larry Scott Trail, I encounter people. So I'm not indoors. On the other hand, I'm not socializing.
Right.
Isn't socializing the real key concept?
Yeah, I think some people may be afraid to go outside of their houses. I don't know, but I know that anxiety can affect the mind in many ways. And, you know, I go outside. I say hello to people, you know, from appropriate distance away. I'm in my garden and they're walking by. I'll say hello. And I think that's important. If you go to the co-op, you know, you wear a mask and you wash your hands, and you can still nod to people. I don't know if they can tell if you're smiling or not, but, you know, that's still socialization. It's just from a safer distance. And so I feel like I get a lot of social interaction on the phone, by texting, email, but that doesn't mean everybody does. And just to know that there are a lot of resources out there for people who may be feeling very strained. And I looked those up this morning on the local 2020 website, and they have a whole list of a 24-hour crisis line and places where actual counselors can talk to you on the phone if you call. So I think that that's going to be posted along with this broadcast later today that people can look up. But the local2020.org, which is l2020.org, has a lot of resources, and I would encourage people to look at it for very local information and help.
And I'm thinking that your work with at the University of Washington in the Hall Health Center, working with students, might have made you especially keen on the importance of good mental health related to also good physical health.
Yeah, I just think it's all part of one package, but it's often an outlier, or considered an outlier, in one's health. And that shouldn't be, because your mental health can affect your physical health tremendously, just as your physical health can affect your mental health. So I've always been very keen on looking for the reason, real reason, say a student came into the consulting nurse station, or, you know, the mind is an incredible, I guess the brain is an incredible organ that the mind is within, and it can go so many places that it takes a detective to kind of figure out what's really going on. So I enjoy that part of nursing.
One of the other aspects of this that I have not seen written in any publication, I guess, that I read a good bit or heard, is what we can do to strengthen our bodies, to minimize the possibility that we might actually get the disease should we come in contact with it, also reduce its effect upon us. Now, we hear a good bit about underlying conditions, and we hear a good bit about how over 60 you need to be especially cautious, but we don't hear about what we can do to make ourselves stronger. I would imagine you would have some examples of good bodybuilding, we won't say weightlifting, but bodybuilding, body strengthening, things that we can do to minimize the impact that the disease might have upon us.
Well, I think your best defense is your own immune system and your hand washing, et cetera. But just eating nutritiously, getting enough rest, getting out and walking, yoga, meditation. I mean, there are many things that we can do to ourselves that benefit our minds and immune system. So, the better you take care of yourself, the better your body can defend itself against invaders such as viruses.
One of the pre-existing conditions, I had not considered it such, but an article in the New York Times, I think last week it was, that suggested actually a couple of things. One, that asthma is not now considered to be a significant pre-existing condition with respect to COVID-19, which is a change. This was based on a study that I cannot cite. But the other was, and a surprise to the people doing this work, this research, is the effect of obesity as a pre-existing condition. And one of the things that came to mind today as I was coming into town was, we think of the epidemic as a now thing, but the epidemic is going to be a year thing at least. And if we're, you know, if losing some weight would do us some good, it may not do us any good tomorrow, because it won't it won't happen that fast. But if we think about it as important, when the virus comes around again the next time, we could be better equipped to deal with it.
Yeah. You know, carrying around too much weight is a strain on your body. It's a strain on your heart, a strain on your knees. And I think similar to if you were to stop smoking, even one day having stopped smoking is of benefit to your body and your circulation, etc. But starting to change your lifestyle is what's needed to help reduce carrying extra weight. And you have to start at some point. And to say it's not going to help, I wouldn't say that. I'd say if you can get a mindset that says this is your goal, and you work towards it, it does take a long time, but you can benefit from it. And I'm not surprised that it's considered a risk factor. And I was surprised also about the asthma not being a risk factor. I don't understand why that wouldn't be, because asthma is a reactionary respiratory problem. So there's some new findings, number of new findings that are coming out about the COVID-19 disease, and they're pretty scary. I don't know that we have time to go into those today or not. How much time do we have?
We have another 5 minutes or so, and we could talk about those things if you want to, but there are other items that you had on your list and I have on mine that are not scary. So perhaps we would make those a priority. If we want to get scared, we can wait for Halloween.
We won't have to wait that long.
I'm probably right about that. So in the correspondence we've had, you referred back to your experience, again, when you were at the University of Washington and the SARS epidemic, and the way that government responded then, the federal government responded then, compared to the way the federal government has been responding now. What can you share with us about that?
Well, I wasn't at the University of Washington in 2003, but I was there in 2009 with the H1N1 virus that students started coming back in the spring of 2009 from spring break, terribly sick. And that spring was just a crazy time at the health center. And then it came back in the fall of 2009 as well. And there were a lot of things that were different. First of all, we had a president who could actually think on his feet and sound intelligent. And we also had the Strategic National Supplies, which are warehouses essentially around the country that the federal government keeps stocked to help. And those were deployed back in, I think initially in after 9/11. But in 2009, I was looking up this, and they had 12.5 million antiviral regimens were be able to send out. They had 19.6 million pieces of PPE. They had N95 respirators. They have ventilators, etc. And the function of these warehouses, the Strategic National Supply, is to act fast right at the beginning of an emergency, such as that H1N1 influenza pandemic. And So local governments, et cetera, can kind of get their feet on the ground and work from there. I've heard that Trump has been saying that he inherited an empty shelf with this supply, but that wasn't necessarily true.
It wasn't true at all, actually.
And yes. But it's still ponder why we didn't receive more of those supplies when this pandemic was on its way or was here. So that's another story. I'm afraid that science and the pandemic is like a political football to this administration, and it's called a hoax. you know, it's somehow it's anti-Republican. It's not to be believed that we're going through this. And with Trump tweeting to other states to be, you know, be, let their people be liberated from the stay-at-home orders, et cetera, that's so irresponsible.
So you're critical of President Trump. Many are critical of President Trump. But how about Governor Inslee?
I think he's doing a great job. And I know he's looking to the county health officers for information on how it's going in county by county. And we'll be, I'm sure they're in daily contact as far as what is the reopening of our society going to look like? I think that's a huge question, and I don't have any answers. I think it's to be taken slowly, but and there are a lot of people hurting economically because the society is closed, businesses are closed. I think it's a very tough call, and I'm hopeful that we can work it out gradually somehow where we can stay as well as we can. And the health department can jump on any positive cases that may show up and can act quickly because there is a number of things that they know now that they didn't know when the pandemic came into the United States.
Lynn, you wrote to me also that there are reasons to believe that private pharmaceutical companies are not likely to want to develop a vaccine for this virus because once it's used, once the virus is eradicated, there isn't much of a market for the product. If that is the case, does that then not argue for public funding for at least some research and development into vaccines?
Well, yes, to research and development into antivirals as well. It can't be left in the hands of only the profiteers off these medications. And I think it would benefit the United States tremendously if there was combined research and working together somehow with the public companies and the government labs such as the FDA. I mean, get these scientific minds to research and create new antivirals together, new vaccines. I just don't see it happening because of the amount of money that pharmaceutical companies make from their individual products and how carefully they protect their patents. So it may be somewhat of a pipe dream, but we certainly need more funding in the governmental lab so that we have, you know, our own basis of information that isn't poo-pooed by the administration, however.
Speaking of the administration, which we seem to be doing, would you recommend injecting or digesting?
Oh, God, no.
Lynn, I'm not surprised to hear you say that.
You know what? I know what you're referring to, as you can tell, but at yesterday's briefing, President Trump actually was suggesting that people, oh, don't you think we could just inject disinfectants and therefore get rid of the virus? Or how about some UV light? How could we get that in the bodies to take care of it? I mean, this is idiotic. This is poisonous.
And with that, Lynn Sorensen, though I don't disagree with you, I need to move on pretty soon here. Lynn Sorensen, RN, BSN, and a rather political person as well. And a woman with interest in music. You recommended for your saying goodbye to our listeners, Tom Waits, You Can Never Hold Back Spring. Why do you like this?
I like Tom Waits, and it's somewhat of a melancholy song, but it also has a hopeful note to it. And so it might soothe some political minds, such as mine at this moment, just to move on with the day and as hopeful as possible.
And do you know Blossom Dearie's They Say It's Spring?
I don't know.
Oh, then you'll find it on YouTube. That is my gift to you this afternoon.
Okay. Thanks, Bill.
Thank you, Lynn. And we'll be in touch with you on the air in 2 weeks and most likely in other ways between now and then. And thank you very much.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Bye. Lynn Sorensen, RNBSN, Through Science to Health.